Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Ballard Radio. My name is Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the one, the only, big fat drunk. How are you doing tonight, BFT?
Lord, I was born a rambling man.
That's the Sean Watson. If you didn't get the memo, if you forgot your stilettos, you know.
I had to sing it because I couldn't carry a tune if it had a handle.
No, it was very nice. It was very nice. So, BFT, did you know that Obama is still in office? Cody by Joyce Mayer was just released. Kawhi is still in San Antonio. Batman versus Superman is in the box office. Brock Osweiler is a starting quarterback, and it's 2016 again.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I don't know if it's 2015 or 2016. I can't really decide. They're both, yeah, they're all kind of similar in that way, right?
Yeah, I think it's 2015, but what makes it 2016 is this week, just because Name Redacted is a starting quarterback. But I think the offense and kind of defense more resembles 2015 because the secondary isn't as good as it was in 2016.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yes, I think you're dead on right. We've been kind of making that joke for a couple of days now that it just really seems like we're having, like, Houston Texans flashbacks, right? And I brought up, I really love the analogy I came up with that nobody else probably understood, is the 1983 Chicago White Sox and winning ugly, and how that just seems to be the exact Texan style. They win ugly, and then in 1983, the Baltimore Orioles then just drove straight through the White Sox, and they were out. And everybody was like, "Oh, Tony La Russa!" That was the beginning of the whole Tony La Russa.
I hate him so much,
and he's just the worst.
Yeah.
I see all those, like, everybody thinks Bill O'Brien's like this awesome, outstanding head coach, and to me, he's like the Tony La Russa of his time. He's just overrated, and he just lives purely off reputation and not actually like production.
That makes me probably dislike Bill O'Brien even more. I'm still upset about the 2011 World Series when Joe Buck and Troy Aikman took every opportunity to, you know, say Ron Washington was stupid and this and that. And then Tony La Russa would do like the same thing that was questionable, but he became a genius and a master. And I just wanted to throw up all over myself the entire time.
He was pretty much, and he was terrible. I mean, it's not that he was even like a good manager. It's like if you go back and you look at the advanced stats, for years he was a below average manager. He was, God, who am I trying to think of? St. Louis Cardinal infielder who everybody loved for like years. Short guy. I can't remember his name. He's like the guy who he's around so long.
David Eckenstein?
Yes, that's it. That's it, David Eckenstein. That he's just around so long, he actually cost your team more games than you ever even imagine.
Yeah.
That's what he was.
When you walk and you sprint to first base, that's worth at least one win every year.
Right.
At least. I haven't run the numbers on it yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so right now, Deshaun Watson's core's in shambles. He couldn't even take an airplane over to Jacksonville. He had to ride a bus, which is just, like, the funniest thing ever. I imagine him on a Greyhound and it, like, bumpy the entire way and him like falling asleep on like some giant woman's shoulder and slobbering on it, and then like waking up like 4 hours later and he's sitting next to like a bunch of chickens, you know. I imagine some big ragtag affair driving down to Jacksonville. And so with him injured right now, the Texans have really reverted back to the past, but this time it's in a different way and everything has changed once again. This time they're playing 2014-2016 football. It's run the ball, control the clock, play defense, do just enough on offense, and hope and pray that's enough. And the more things change, the more, you know, how the cliche goes. So BFD, do you think this change is the right move right now, considering the injuries that Deshaun Watson has?
No, I don't like that particular change. The change that I like that I saw on Sunday, and it was good seeing it considering, you know, if, again, if two guys in their mother's basements blogging can see this in the first game and second game, then why can't the coaching staff see it and adjust for it? But I saw a couple of running back chips. I saw some tight ends trying to help out. Jordan Akins, not so much. That was pretty sound. And Ngakoue sack, that was just pitiful. Mm-hmm. But you saw, and we did a lot more play action, it seemed. And it also seemed like we were doing some more things to get some, there was actually a bootleg. We're doing things to get Deshaun Watson out of the pocket a little bit more. It wasn't like this grand move, but it was like enough to say, hey, maybe they are catching on that we need to protect our franchise quarterback, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like that. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I think like against the Colts, they were more, the offense looked more like it did whenever Watson was healthy in 2017 than it did last week. But I think with the injuries Watson has, I think they kind of did as about, but they were like as good in the middle as you can be with, you know, play action, creative run plays without actually using him as a runner. And I don't know why Jacksonville bought it at all. Like they were actually watching Watson over there whenever there's no way he's even going to run with the injuries he's had right now. The play action was nice. The bootlegs are good. Even though Watson completed 50% of his passes, like he didn't get creamed. I think the biggest thing that I enjoyed about the offense was, like you just mentioned, where they were actually chipping on the edge. That Akins block was terrible. I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't think he's a blocker at all whatsoever, but he's still better than Ryan Griffin. I think he's more of just like a slot receiver. But like Jordan Thomas will actually get in there and block. But they used guys multiple times. They even did those formations where they had both Blue and Lamar Miller in the backfield and split back, helping out each tackle. And it was, you know, monumental. I can't believe that they actually did it. And so they're finally doing, like, it's like every week they're doing something a little bit smarter than they should have done 6 weeks ago. And so maybe by the time, like, week 17 rolls around, this team is actually playing at, like, its full performance level.
Yeah, it's like, because our coach is learning. And I thought they were learning last year. And there's been so many step backs, it seems like. And once again, trying to type fit Deshaun Watson into Bill O'Brien's scheme where there's all the reads, the plays take so long to develop. You can't do that with four brand new guys and still a guy in his second season on the offensive line. You just can't do that. And so, and then playing guys out of position like Davenport. So at least they're doing something. So I am, you know, I've been so negative about this team all season since the first game, especially since the first three games. I'm trying to be more optimistic. Hopefully this is the start of, hey, now some of this stuff was actually working. We ran the ball more effectively against a pretty good run defense. Maybe we should start doing some of these things differently like we were doing last year when it was very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think overall their game plan offense is going to be a lot like what we saw last week. They played Miami this week. They played Denver the following week. They played Washington, Tennessee, Cleveland, Indy, the Jets, Philly, and Jacksonville. Miami, Denver, Washington, Tennessee. Cleveland, probably a little bit less. But the Jets and Jacksonville, those are all run-heavy teams. And so Houston's going to match up really well defensively against all these teams. Probably only Cleveland and Mayfield can give them a little bit of trouble because they have to push the ball downfield a little bit. But I haven't watched a Cleveland game this year. I'm not going to. So what do I know about them? But Philadelphia actually has a legitimate quarterback who throws downfield. So I think Houston will be okay with this, you know, more conservative, run the ball, don't turn the ball over, you know, have DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller get open six times a game, score 20 points offense, just because they're going against such run-heavy offenses, you know, from here on out.
Yeah, and we're going to hold off. I guess we're probably going to hold off talking about that, but the Texans run defense, man, wow. They're, I thought they were going to be good. They're not good. they're like borderline historic.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about them a little bit later on too. And so I guess also like the way this season I'm expecting to work out is they have an easy schedule. They have a bunch of teams that match up really well and have 4-3 their first place in the AFC South. And so while Watson, you know, slowly plays himself into health and, you know, only gets sacked one time a game and takes like seven hits, as he slowly gets healthy, hopefully they're ready, like, by the time December runs around to actually to, you know, run the super cool offense, to have the play-action deep passing around again, to have the run plays actually utilize Watson as a runner, And it's kind of like what they've learned more in the conservative ways and, you know, extrapolate in the future where they actually keep helping out with pass protection on the outside. And then also like Watson, too, as a player, just I think it may be even good for him in a way playing like this because the limitation on turnovers is really the biggest thing he has to do. Like he's playing on a team now with the schedule where he has to be like as good as Brian Hoyer and they'll probably win 9 games, 10 games at a minimum.
Yeah, and that's the other feel about this that is not only a harken back to 2015 and 2016, but also has been so disappointing in its own way is that Deshaun Watson, we're turning him into a game management quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, kind of like, okay, I'm going to go buy this Ferrari and then I'm never going to take it on the highway and I'm always going to go 20 in the neighborhoods kind of thing with it. It's like, well, why'd you buy the Ferrari? I just feel like we're really wasting Deshaun Watson's talent. Again, why I don't like Bill O'Brien. Deshaun Watson is a Ferrari. Can we please use him like one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm okay with it for now just because of the injuries. But if it's December, 17th, and they're still doing this, I think there's going to be like a much bigger problem, a much legitimate more problems because if they think this team makes the playoffs, they're going to play either Los Angeles, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, New England. And these are all teams that spread the ball out, throw the ball a lot, and the exact type of defenses that will give them trouble or the exact type of offenses that will give them trouble as well too. So I'm okay with it for now. I just think it's going to be something that will have to change in a month or two as the postseason gets closer along. They actually have to play good teams again.
Yeah, and the other one I'm kind of wondering about is even the Ravens. I mean, their pass offense is 7th by DVOA right now. The Ravens, Joe Flacco is actually doing stuff this year, as shocking as that sounds. So this is not a small problem that we've got going on. We're going to have to be able to score more than 20 points a game at some point, even as good as our defense is.
Well, and that's the question I have for you now is, do you think if they decide to stick with this, sort of concerted offensive approach, and then maybe open things up more later on, do you think they're going to be able to keep this up and keep winning games in this way against the teams that they play on their schedule? Because, again, Washington's probably the best team they have to play the rest of the way. Philadelphia hasn't played well, but you assume talent's going to win out, especially the defensive line that they have. And Wentz is a good quarterback. And then I still think the Jags will get better later on because, again, I think talent wins out, kind of what we saw the Vikings earlier this year too. But do you think they're going to be able to keep winning games in this fashion? He's like 2010 games like this.
Yeah, I mean, look at the schedule. I mean, you've already kind of gone over it. The schedule is Miami, Denver. I mean, Case Keenum's been terrible this year. He was, they've been calling for his head for a couple weeks now in Denver with good cause. Wow, we didn't see that one coming. Then Washington, Alex Smith. That game actually worries me from that perspective because Alex Smith is – he's not having a good year, but he also knows how to beat us. And so it's just – is he going to be able to come up with a strategy? Tennessee is having all sorts of issues. Cleveland, you brought up Mayfield. I think that's going to be a good one. I think if Mayfield had a wide receiver core right now, they would be a far better team. They're running on fumes. They've got to be missing Josh Gordon right now. Indianapolis, the Jets – Sam Darnold is a turnover freaking machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Philadelphia and Jacksonville, and hopefully Cody Kessler will be, if they're lucky, will be starting quarterback at that point in time. But when you look at the quarterbacks that we're playing the rest of the season, by DYIAR, Carson Wentz is like 15th. That's the best quarterback we play.
And he missed 2 weeks too, so that's total value. So that probably will jump off too as time goes on because he throws so many touchdowns,
Yeah. And the next one is Case Keenum, and he's way down there. So we do not face anybody who's actually good at quarterback, good at playing the quarterback position the rest of the season.
Yeah. And so that's why I think this works. I mean, I don't like it. I don't love it. I understand what they're doing and why they're doing just because of the injuries to Watson. And so it's going to work as long as they keep playing teams that you have to rely on the run game to win. Houston's going to be fine, and I think they'll be able to win enough close games to keep the win streak going and stay top the AFC South. The one thing I am really hoping for, though, is that week 17, we get Jacksonville, we get Houston, we get AFC South championship game, we get me and Houston calling in sick to work on Monday, and living one of the greatest days of my life, a day I've been waiting 3 years for, that not even the Tennessee Titans can screw up this time.
Well, I think I think that right now, if I were to guess, I think the Houston Texans, with the schedule they've got lined up, I can only see two games I'm even, that concerned about. This is easily a team that could go 11-5 and be like the worst 11-5 team in the history of pro football. Get blown out of the playoffs in the first game.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the worst 11-5 team I've ever seen. And like the last like awful playoff team I saw was the Matt Moore Dolphins, and they lost by like 24 to the Steelers because they won like 7-1 possession games with a terribly easy schedule. And then there was also, the 7-9 Seahawks team that ended up even being the Saints. So I can't think of a really bad 11-5 team. That's something I have to go back and look at.
Yeah. And this is a team that's going to go 11-5, and then right now is ranked 13th in DVOA.
Yeah.
It's just these things are don't connect very well.
Yeah. So we'll talk about this game now. And one of the questions we have is from Texian Army. And this is a heartstring question. So BFT, he asked, would y'all consider this up there as one of your favorite Texan wins ever? And his reasoning was that they went out on the road, beat up on a team that's supposed to be a bully, left the game. The Jacksonville's in shambles. It was like Sherman leaving Atlanta whenever they headed back to Houston. So was this one of your favorite Texans wins you've ever seen?
This isn't even in the top 10, I don't think. I think if we're really talking about true – favorite Houston Texans wins, it's not even close. The reason is that Blake Bortles melted down on the field, and we've all been expecting it for years. Cody Kessler came in and threw his 5 yards per pass. The defense won this game. Bortles fumbling, the lucky interception, tip throw interception by Matthew. This was a game completely won by the defense. And if I'm a Houston Texan fan and I've got Deshaun Watson at quarterback and scoring 17 points without the defense's help, I want to be excited about the whole team, not just like the defense. The fact that we went to Jacksonville and beat a team that's been playing like terribly for the past couple weeks, again, this was a game that we kind of thought, okay, Jacksonville's going to really crush Deshaun Watson. That didn't happen. And that was ultimately the difference of the game. Got to give credit to Pearl Onions, who said, whomever creates the most turnovers is going to win this game. And that's what happened exactly in this game. So it's a great win. Again, I still think this is an 11-5 team that's not going to go far in the playoffs. And, I just look at, like, the 2012 season. I look at the Bengals playoff wins against them, and I'm a lot more excited about games like that. True team efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was probably the best win so far this year, because the Colts game had the right thing and they blew that game, allowed the Colts come back into it. The win against the Bills was just a travesty. The win against Dallas was just two mediocre teams kind of playing hot potato and not seizing the opportunity they had available to them. And then I can't remember the fourth other game they won. This year has put holes in my brain. Yeah, and then maybe Jacksonville, just the most recent one. I think this was the best game, the best like team win so far this year, just because it was one of the monumental reasons for their first place in the AFC South now. Jacksonville is fighting the locker room afterwards. Just how well the defense played too. And like Watson didn't turn the ball over. The pass protection was actually fine. But like, I don't know. I would put probably, if you asked me a year later from now, or even like 6 weeks later from now, and gave me a piece of paper and said, all right, write down your 10 favorite Texans wins, I don't think this one would even register as a memory at all. Like, I don't think I would even see a flash of anything from this.
Yeah. Because even if I think of like one of the games last year against Jacksonville, when Blake Bortles had the interception off one of our guys' feet, that's memorable.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, I think. That was also the year where – I think that was the first time they played in 2016. And the second time was whenever Name Redacted got benched for Tom Savage. Oh. Tom Savage came in and won it. And then that was during their their big win streak at the end of the year too.
Yeah, wow.
The kick pick was great though.
That was awesome. That was
all time. All time. So in this game on offensively, the Jags defense, they went back to playing man coverage for this one after getting scorched by Kansas City and Dallas with all that silly cover four, which against Dallas especially, like I still will never understand that. Against Kansas City, I can see a little bit. They were able to force Mahomes with some interceptions, but they allowed him to run too much. And then also, you know, with a guy with Mahomes with the arm that he has, he's able to pretty much put the ball through any window available to him. You kind of have to play man coverage against them. And they play bits of coverage too as well. The best part about this, though, is that the return back to man coverage, Gosselov, Jalen Ramsey versus DeAndre Hopkins, and A.J. Boye versus Will Fuller. So what was your favorite play in these two different matchups this game?
It was one of them they actually focused on because it just showed what – it showed a flash of what this offense is capable of doing, and it's what I'd like to see really going forward. And it was the one that they focused on where you had Boye on Will Fuller, and the Jalen Ramsey, DeAndre Hopkins matchups, by the way, were just a blast to watch. But this – it was when Fuller looked like he was going to go deep. He was running a streak. And he cut and made an out route, and he created on Boye, who is a great defender, he created a solid, like, 8 yards of separation like that. I mean, it was like somebody flicked a switch, and Fuller was here, and Boye was over there. And it was just beautiful. Just loved it.
Yeah, it was like there was a strobe light on whenever he was running that route. It's like you know, there's a flash, he's there, and then another flash, he's at the sideline wide open.
I'm talking about, I get chills talking about, because that's what this offense is capable of. It's got such great, well, it's got Lamar Miller who looked good on Sunday and who should be doing much more. But DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller should be murdering teams together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my thing is, like, whenever I watch, I really enjoy watching cornerback defensive back play, but as somebody who's never been fast in their entire life who has never played wide receiver, defensive back at all. Like, even in like pickup football, like I'm just staying in the middle of the field or running post routes over and over again. Like I just like watch him be like, oh, that was kind of cool how he like stepped here and then stepped there and like put his arm right there and then turned there. And like you read actual analysis for him, like, yeah, the drop step here swiveled his hips over here and they're in fire coverage. So he's looking this way and he has this eye over there. It's like, I enjoy it like purely as an aesthetic level whenever I watch wide receiver defensive back play. And so my favorite play was the Hopkins one-handed catch, of course. And then the thing I liked most about it was how he used his arm to create separation, but he alligator armed it like Roy Williams going up for like a pass over his head and was just able to like stave him off just enough without the full extension to draw the flag. And like you kind of just see like how masterful of a route runner Hopkins is. And the other thing that was cool about it too was just like how exhausting it is to get open against Jalen Ramsey. Like even when you beat him, it's like you're, you know, hiking the Appalachian Trail. Like it's long, it's slaughterous, it takes forever, and you have to do so many things to even create like an inch of separation against them. And watching those two guys is always just a blast too.
It's kind of funny because there's a lot of speculation, and it reminds me of Nnamdi Asamoah. When he came out, there's a lot of speculation that Jalen Ramsey is going to play safety. Could you imagine what a waste of talent that would be if Ramsey played safety coming out of college? He is, I mean, I don't even know how to put this, you know, politely. He's right now the best cornerback in the league, and he might wind up being up there with Deion Sanders and Darryl Green and those sorts of guys with how freaking good he is.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool too for Ramsey because he's playing in like an age where the numbers are getting a little bit better for defensive back play. And so although he only had – I think he had 20 passes deflected last year, but he had 3 interceptions. And so you're like, yeah, he's okay. He didn't have 8 interceptions, you know. And so now, like, the numbers have been able to go from that to, you know, average air yard per target, success rate, yards after catch allowed, completion percentage allowed against you, yards per pass allowed. So there's a lot more different numbers available to him, and it's been able to better, you know, articulate how good of a cornerback Ramsey is instead of just being like, he's not that good. He only has 2 interceptions.
Yeah, because that was always rubbish, but we had no other way to look at it. So you look at some guys, you know, that were clearly good cornerbacks, but you couldn't justify why they were good cornerbacks. Now we can.
Yeah, especially when they run off the screen of the television, you know, right away too. The other thing about this game was with these two cornerbacks here on these two wide receivers on the outside, the entire middle of the field should have been open. You know, Miles Jack and Tolvin Smith are really fast linebackers, but they're mostly playing like underneath hook zones. So instead, you're supposed to have guys going against Tyler Patman, who is a terrible slot corner, going up against Barry Church, who's had a bad year. And then Tayshaun Gibson kind of hangs back there to pick up the flotsam afterwards. And so in this game, Ryan Griffin is out. And so the Texans rookie tight ends, Jordan Thomas and Jordan Akins, were in. And so we had a question from Huggy Bear. He asked, BFD, how much did Ryan Griffin's absence contribute to the slowing down of the Texans offense? Harder game plan with a hurt quarterback, or harder game plan with a hurt quarterback when your best midfield target is out?
Look, let's just be clear. Huggy is trolling me. So he knows how much I really despise Ryan Griffin. Ryan Griffin is like one of the least effective tight ends in the National Football League. He's not effective. He's not efficient. So it's Huggy's trolling. One of the things that I did notice in the game is it did seem like they're running, at times they're using their linebackers a little more like the classic Tampa 2 scheme where they're dropping their linebackers back a lot more. And that kind of caught me off guard. It also made me wonder, as good of a game as Lamar Miller had, is if he could have been more effective in the passing game simply because of that. Now, if you're Jacksonville, you can look at it the other way and say, okay, I can drop Jack and Tevin Smith back deeper because they're so crazy fast. They can make up the ground in front of them and see the play in front of them. So I think when you start looking at the next matchup against Jacksonville, that is something that I would absolutely go after. As I'd want to see, are they still dropping their linebackers back that far? If so, they're going to give me a lot of room underneath to do some damage if I can't go over the top of them.
Yeah, and one of the things that also kind of, I think, hurt the offense and one of the reasons why they kind of just stuck at 20 points was they lost Kiki Cutie in the first quarter. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Patman's a terrible slot corner. And so that would have been a matchup they could have went to over and over again. I know Cutie had one catch, but it was probably a game where he probably could have had, you know, 6 or 7, like, really easy wide open post routes just because of the problems that Patman has out there. And instead, they moved to Tyler Irvin at slot receiver, and he caught one pass in between zones. And that worked out okay. And so if Cutie misses any time, are you expecting Irvin to play to stick at the slot like that?
I think they've already announced that he is, which is really, just really horribly depressing.
Yeah, it's better than Braxton Miller, the problem.
Better than Braxton Miller, better than some of the other junk they've trotted out there recently. But, I mean, can we at least try Vincent Smith out there? Can he try that, please? Just give me somebody who's not Tyler Scissorhands. I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, Vincent Smith is just like a close-your-eyes, Hail Mary guy. He's just like Jalen Strong pretty much, where, you know, if it's the end of the second quarter, you're playing the Colts, you just kind of throw it up to him and hope he makes the play. So the other thing about this game that was really important was that Houston's pass protection was a lot better. In this game, they allowed just one sack. Like last week when they allowed 7 sacks to Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, and Kyle Williams. The big difference this week was that it was only Yannick Ngakoue. So they weren't having Calais Campbell. They weren't having Malik Jackson and Dante Fowler and Telvin Smith, you know, all getting after Deshaun Watson. The pass rush was kind of cornered into just Ngakoue versus Julian Davenport. And also the run game was a lot better too, where Miller had 100 yards on 22 carries. And it was his best game he's had since week 16, 2016, you know, because it's 2016 still. Against the Indianapolis Colts and their cheesy defense. So, BFD, what was more surprising to you? Was it the pass protection or was it the run game success?
It's definitely the pass protection because I think we were all – I think a lot of people, if you watch Jacksonville and what they did to us last year, and you even mentioned it, Deshaun Watson's going to become pink mist. And that was my fear. But I think clearly Clay Campbell was not playing at 100%, so that hurt them. But – you start looking at that line and maybe you start thinking they're coming together a little bit. And I think one guy who really stuck out at me on the line, except for Davenport getting beat wide by Ngakoue, was Greg Manx. Had a heck of a game. And that was great to see. I mean, I think right now, if you were to say who is the best, you know, Houston Texans offensive lineman, it's Manx. And I don't think it's very close.
Yeah. I would need to watch the All 22 and watch the run game. I won't have enough time this week, but I do want to write something about the offensive line, hopefully for next week, since we'll have the game over on Thursday. And I'll be hungover on an airplane, come back from Vegas this week too, to have some time, maybe do something like that. But the one thing I noticed, like watching it live, was Manx and Martin were always in the second part of the defense. So they were constantly able to get first level movement. And Manx was actually blocking linebackers, like the inside zone run touchdown Lamar Miller had. They had a great ace block on there. And you can even see it from the broadcast view, which is a hard thing to see. And that was just how much movement they were able to generate. I know Manx did give up that one sack because he overextended over on Calais Campbell, which allowed Fowler to come through. And that was the only sack Houston allowed. But yeah, overall, the run game and how like good it was really surprising, because Jacksonville's run defense has been – it was sixth in DVOA entering this week, and I wasn't expecting Houston to get anything at all on the ground at all. I thought it was going to be a lot of like – hopefully Deshaun Watson's able to find Hopkins for two touchdowns and they take advantage of turnovers, which they did in this game too.
Yeah, and I would not – I guess what I've been saying all year is – there is real talent there on the Houston Texans offensive line. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure of that. And I think it's just a matter of time for these guys to play and work together for a little bit. This is, setting expectations, realistic expectations. This is what I would expect from guys who are just playing for the first time together under fire.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was going to say, you've been more patient than I've been with the offensive line. I've kind of got a little hopeless with them. Like, yeah, cut him, trade him. Get rid of him. Who cares? Screw all these guys. They're all terrible. But that's an important point. Like, it's hard because, I mean, every single guy on the offensive line has never played next to both of the guys around him since they both played this year. And, like, Fulton's worse than he was in Kansas City. Calamente's worse than he was in Kansas City. Martin, until this game, I felt like he is still unable to reach the outside shoulder. And he's a good pass protector at the center position. But your pass protection is pretty easy as a center. You're rarely getting one-on-one blocks. You're mainly helping. Davenport was better than he was last year. Martinez Rankin looked like a right tackle in college. I don't think he ever had the foot speed in college to play left tackle. And he was an albatross there at left. And then, like, the only player who's been better than he was before is Kendall Lamb, who's gone from absolutely unplayable, the worst offensive tackle I've ever seen, to, somewhat incompetent. Or I guess incompetent is a better way to say it. But that's a lot better than, being in a shallow grave. So, it's been weird, but I think a big point of it is what you're saying, where they need to be patient. These guys have never played together, and it takes time for these things to kind of gel too.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think that I would rather see Fulton at center than Martin. And I called him Zach Martin last week. Sorry about that. I forgot to correct myself. I'd rather see Fulton at center. I think Nick Martin is not very good. But if I saw a line that showed me from left to right, Davenport, Calamete, Fulton, Manx, and Rankin, mm-hmm. and you put those guys together, I think you'd have a very, very good offensive line in a couple of games. But
I think that'd be their best combo. I think you could even sub out Manx for Calamete and then put Martin at center, just because Martin has the draft capital and – he's a good enough like helper in pass protection, and like he has potential, like the talent's there. I think his biggest issue is he just has trouble reaching the outside shoulder, and that's something that you have to do as a center.
Yeah, which I mean, I think Fulton was better at center than Martin is, but
mm-hmm.
why say that?
Yeah, I think it should still get better, and then also too, running the ball. Successfully, just helps out the passing game too. So Davenport was the one guy who got beat a pretty good amount of times. He's going against Ngakoue, who, is one of the top 10 best edge rushers in football. He had 4 sacks during this game. He had 19 pressures. He had 7 quarterback hits. He was leading Jacksonville in every pass rush category so far this year. And the Jaguars pass rush doesn't have the sacks that it had last year, but it's been able to pressure the quarterback, pretty consistently. And Davenport, he had trouble with the speed rush. I think some of that, too, where they were chipping so far on the edge that he had trouble, running and keeping up with how deep these pass route angles were, where, the defensive end was even able to provide pressure, really, because of how deep it was. And Watson was able to step up, pretty nicely. But he still got beat by some inside-out moves. But I think overall he was better than he was the week before against Buffalo. And, you know, I want to say, too, the one that made really kind of confused me about that game, seeing all the numbers come out from PFF specifically, was I felt like Lamb had a much worse game than Davenport did in that one. I think Lamb – I counted Lamb giving up two sacks and Davenport two sacks, but they switched it and said, you know, Davenport gave up three and Lamb gave up one. And Davenport had like a rating of like 32 was his grade, and Lamb's was like 70. So, and I think most of the negativity was the pass first. So I thought that was kind of strange. But, you know, Davenport, I think, did well enough. And it was really good that Houston finally used, you know, Blue and Miller and those split shotgun back sets to chip out on the edge. And then also using Akins and Thomas to help chip too against Jacksonville's best pass rusher. And by containing that and then helping out, you know, Davenport against him, leads to Watson only taking one sack. And with his talent, you know, he's able to break out some other ones. Like he broke out of three guys hitting that once to roll out to the right too. So, you know, it was really good. And it was good to see, especially with the pass rush that, you know, that Jacksonville has had this year and also going back to last year too.
Yeah, and I think that one play when, you know, I was making fun of Akins earlier a little bit for it, I think that also hurt Davenport because, I mean, that was that crazy wide nine stuff that almost never works that I just so despise. And here's Ngakoue is so fast. He beats the tight end out of the nine wide, and he blocks Davenport out of making a block on the play.
Yeah. So. Yeah, then Watson was able to step up pretty nicely. And that was the sack that Manx gave up too. Yeah, and so, like, that's kind of the thing about wide nines is unless you're able to bend and get that angle, you take yourself out a lot of rushes.
God, that guy is something else. Ngakoue is. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he reminds me of, like, Spider-Man. Like, he's so stretchy with his ribs and how long his arms are.
What a heck of a player.
So offensively, is there anything else that you want to touch on?
Just a little bit. Lamar Miller. I think this is a better use of Lamar Miller than what we have been in the past. We did this against Jacksonville. And stop giving the ball to Alfred Blue, for crikey's sake. I just can't. Every time Alfred Blue carries the ball, a puppy gets kicked in the nuts.
Yeah, that's fine by me. I think there's too many, you know, we need to neuter our pets. There's too many nuts in these puppies out here nowadays. So I'd be fine for more Alpha Blue carries.
Wow, that was nice.
Yeah, so I don't have anything else to add about the offense. But, yeah, I agree. I think this is Miller's best game, you know, in probably, I guess, like half a year or so. Or I guess, I don't know when, week 16, 2016. It's probably a year and a half ago now. But, I understand calendars. This season really has put holes in my brain mathematically. Like, I can't remember anything at all. But, yeah, like, I mean, he was just a really good runner between the tackles, and it was just super weird to see. I thought it was going to be a game where both teams, you know, kind of struggled, and I just thought Jacksonville's pass rush would be better and force Watson to more turnovers than Houston be able to Craig and Sportles and seem like the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in, I guess, 30 seconds. And we're back. So Blake Bortles was 6 for 12 for 61 yards. He also had 6 rushes for 30 yards. The big thing was that he fumbled twice, and he also lost both of those fumbles. So he was benched. Cody Kessler came in, USC's favorite third-round quarterback. He was 21 for 30, 156 yards, one touchdown, which was like the blandest, easiest, most boring touchdown drive I've ever seen. And he threw one interception that went off of T.J. Yeldon's hands into the arms of Tyrann Mathieu. And Kessler was sacked 4 times, and the longest pass he threw in this game was only 15 yards. BFT, what was the reason behind benching Bortles? Do you think it gave Jacksonville their best chance to win too, or was it just some, you know, Mindhunter, super genius Doug Marrone motivation tactics?
I think they felt like the Texans were probably in Bortles' head, which is the only thing I can kind of think of. Because if you're putting in Cody Kessler, it's not like this is going to be some sort of massive upgrade. Basically, you're just hoping and dreaming that Kessler's going to manage the game better than Bortles was doing. Because if you look at their stats, they're basically the same. I mean, the bottom line is it was 5 yards a throw for both of those guys. They weren't pushing the ball downfield. And the only real advantage Bortles has on Kessler is that Bortles is willing to run the ball and can do it effectively. So, but that's not what you ask your quarterback to do. All I can think of is that at the end of last season, we all LOL'd at the fact that they gave Blake He gave Bortles that extension. And, oh, my gosh, who didn't see this meltdown coming at this point? I mean, Bortles is what he is. We thought he was a game manager. Even I've had high hopes for him over the past couple of years. But, man, you don't give a guy like Bortles, what is it, 3 years and $52 million guaranteed?
I don't know what the guarantee was, though. I can't remember. I think his cap in this year is like $13 million or so, though. On the other hand, like he was last year, he was 16th in DVOA, and I thought he was going to be about that again this year. I thought Jackson kind of really figured out what they were doing on offense, and they doubled down on it. And I always like whenever a team kind of understands what their style is, how they need to play to win games, and they understand what they're good at, and they kind of go all in on that. And it's kind of like what Jacksonville did the year before by adding, you know, they saw what they had at cornerback and Ramsey. They saw some of their young pass rushers. They saw what they had in their linebackers, their ability to cover. So they went on and got Calais Campbell and A.J. Boye and said, well, we'll just have, you know, the best pass defense in football. And that's kind of what happened last year. And so they added Andrew Norwell, and they added Austin Seferian Jenkins. When they added those two players, I thought, well, you know, Jacksonville knows what they're going to be. They're going to be an inside-the-tackles run team. They're going to spread things out on third down, run a lot of crossing routes, get the ball to receivers so you can pick up a lot of yards after the catch. And if it's not open, Bortles can just scramble for first downs. And so this year that hasn't been able to happen, one, because Fournette's hurt. And I think they really miss Fournette in games where Bortles is inaccurate, because Fournette's the type of running back who can carry an entire offense by himself between the tackles by consistently getting successful yards. Whereas, you know, like Yeldon's good, but you want him on like first down and third down. You don't want him out there first down, second down, third down. And Yeldon's a good pass catcher, but he's more of an outside zone back. And the Jags really don't have like quick offensive linemen. They're a lot more like bigger, stronger, sort of Mauler types of backs. And then they also lost Marquise Lee to start the year too. And they have and they also lost Austin Seferian Jenkins as well. And they don't really have like that same level of talent wide receiver as far as guys who get yards after the catch. And then you take all of that, and then you add the fact that their best downfield receiver is DJ Chark, who's a rookie who only has 4 receptions this year. They don't have anybody can get open man on man down the field at all. And so they're in this offense that's like in a box. It's cratered in. They're stuck, and they are really just kind of trapped behind there. So I thought Bortles wasn't like, you know, he was bad this game. I don't think he was horrendous at all. I don't think it was warrant, you know, benching him. Really, the thing that he did wrong this game was just have those 2 big fumbles where, you know, Houston was able to successfully recover it. But other than that, like, you know, Keelan Cole dropped 2 for sure first downs. They went behind, and they weren't able to run the ball at all. So you're expecting Bortles to do everything. And to kind of sum it up, where you're talking about the contract, that's the issue with the contract, though, with Bortles. It's not that he can't be a game manager. It's that Bortles doesn't make the guys around him better. He doesn't elevate the players around him at all. And so whenever everything isn't perfect, when there's imperfections, when there's warts, he can't put the makeup on and cover it up. He can't get the guys around him playing better than they actually are. And so you're just kind of stuck. And that's really what's going on with Jacksonville right now. It's just like their entire system, their entire ecosystem is messed up.
Yeah, and I think that's a better take than mine. And it's a 3-year, $54 million contract, 26.5 guaranteed. Because you have to take in consideration that half the Jacksonville starting offense is gone. I think the bigger loss, not bigger than Fournette, but the second biggest loss on that offense is Cam Robinson.
Yeah.
And then you talk about they didn't re-sign Allen Robinson. They let him go to Chicago. So they've made some moves, and they signed Dante Moncrief to take Allen Robinson's place. I mean, how ludicrous is that? I think it's almost the same amount of money, too. So they made some really questionable moves on their wide receiver. So they don't have their skill positions weak. I thought Keelan Cole was going to be a lot better. I thought D.D. Westbrook was going to be a lot better. But everybody's kind of adjusted to what their plan is, which is just run those little guys in slants and let them have an open field. But teams are starting to be able to take that away because Blake Bortles is so inaccurate in part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's also not getting time because the offensive line's not playing well. He doesn't have I think they're down to like their third tight end or fourth tight end or something like that. Their fullback will take a snaps at tight end. So they've lost a lot of players on that offensive side of the ball. And so when you lose that many guys and you're forced to say, okay, I'm going to throw the ball to Keelan Cole and watch him drop balls all game, then that hurts you as a quarterback too. Because, you know, we look at the numbers. He was 6 for well. But I think, what, three or four of those were drops.
Yeah, I know at least two were drops by Cole. And even then, like, 8 for 12 was a big difference than 6 for 12. And that was also two first downs that Cole dropped. That would have at least been field goals probably, too.
Yeah, so that's a really big deal. And Keelan Cole doesn't drop balls. This game, when you start looking at you know, what's the difference in what makes a game, you know, go one way or the other, two first down drops by Cole, you know, the turnovers by Jacksonville, that was the difference of this in this game. It wasn't Bill O'Brien, this master strategist who somehow outsmarted Doug Marrone, and not even close to that. It was the fact that there were these turnovers and drop balls. That's what twisted this game in the Texans' direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And also, like, the thing about those turnovers too, like, they weren't really great impact plays made by Houston. Like, the first fumble that Bortles had, he was, like, you know, playing twister, trying to turn over it for the first down marker, and that be able to keep his body up, and that left the ball exposed when Emerson was able to, you know, force that one out. And the second one, you know, Cunningham tackled from behind, kind of twisted him and threw him, and that separated the ball. And then when it bounced up to Kareem Jackson, you know, right away too. So, you know, recovering fumbles is a luck thing, and Houston was lucky enough to recover them, and they did what they should with it. You know, they turned into 10 points, and that was kind of the difference. But it was, you know, like, it wasn't like, I don't think Bortles had like an absolutely horrendous game. You know, he wasn't like Derek Anderson or Nathan Peterman out there. He just fumbled the ball twice, you know, running for first downs, and Houston happened to recover it.
Yeah. I just think it's funny that people are saying that Bill O'Brien outsmarted Marrone, and it's like, no.
No, he didn't.
No.
So the Jaguars have lost three in a row now. And I think this is one of the things I like about football, where even though they only played 16 games in a season, the season's just so long. And so you have Houston starts off 0-3. Their losing streak just happened to come at the beginning of the year rather than the middle of the year. And now Jackson was going through something similar where, you know, they're 0-3. They lost to Kansas City. They lost to Dallas. And they've lost to Houston now. What do you think the Jags can do to kind of turn this thing around on their end? And this week they play Philadelphia in London at 8:30 in the morning. And Bortles is great in London, too. He loves it out there.
I think what you do is you have to go back to what making Bortles great again. And I think you do that by getting Leonard Fournette.
By burning coal,
clearly.
This is kind of what you – like, it's kind of – I understand what you're saying now. It's a good metaphor. Like, burning coal is giving the ball to Leonard Fournette, run the ball between the tackles. Just going back to, like, smash-mouth football, you know, making it as plain as possible.
Right. Getting Cam Robinson healthy, re-signing Allen Robinson. What made Bortles successful last year is that he had a line that kept him pretty clean, and he had Leonard Fournette to help him. And he doesn't have any of those things. None of those safety blankets exist. So I don't know what Marrone can do to really help Bortles today until at least Fournette comes back, until they at least start getting some competent left tackle play. I just don't – that is just – the pieces aren't there for that to happen, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do – are going to have Carlos Hyde, and Hyde, I think, like – I think he can break tackles, and I think Hyde can be like a fine between the tackles runner. Because they still have Norwell here. They still have Brandon Linder. Linder's a great guard. AJ Cann's mediocre. So they still have interior run blocking. And Hyde's broken tackles, you know, well last year in San Francisco. So, like, even that's better than Yeldon running the ball 15 times between the middle. You know, Yeldon's more of a pass catcher, more of an outside zone runner. So then that's one thing that can help. But, I mean, really the biggest thing for Jacksonville is they have to get leads right away. And their defense needs to create more turnovers. Their defense needs to be better, too. Like, there's no reason why Lamar Miller should be able to run for 100 yards against them. There's no reason that they're only able to get one sack on Watson with the advantage that they have with their front seven. There's no reason they should be playing cover four against the Dallas Cowboys, who had, you know, exactly zero good receivers. There's no need for any of that. And so I think just, like, going back and doing more of what worked last year, and then also, like, their great players need to play better. I think a lot of stuff is kind of simple where they have talent, but their talented guys just need to be better football players than they've been this year and be more like they were in the past too. So, I mean, like, scheme-wise, like, I don't really know a whole lot that they can do. You know, offensively, I think the biggest thing is, you know, having a guy who can run into the tackles, and then Bortles going to have to hit some more downfield throws. Like, they're going to have to hit Charks at least, like, twice a game. They're going to have to hit Moncrief maybe once a game if he can even do that. and just be able to create more separation too from the crossing routes. And maybe then they can write things around a little bit.
Oh man, I was walking home the other day and I just couldn't make it and I charked right in my pants. Sorry, DJ. I'm sure you're cool.
And then whenever Deshaun Watson woke up on the bus, that was one of the other things that happened to him.
Oh, yeah. It was just shark. It was sharks everywhere. Yeah, that's really sad when you're having to go out. And that's the guy who you're really pointing to is DJ Chark. But
he's pretty good.
It's pretty good. He's a pick out of LSU. He's pretty good. But he's, you know, if that's who you're counting on, I think you're in a lot of trouble. And if you're not being able to count on guys like, you know, Safarian Jenkins and you've got so many injuries on your offensive line, it makes it tough. But, yeah, I think you just said it right there is you know, the battle in the locker room was between the offense and the defense, right? But the defense can do a lot more to step up. And every time you mention that Cowboy game and that stupid zone they were playing, it's just like you've got Boye and Ramsey and you're playing zone?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you're allowing Cole Beasley to catch, you know, 10 catches on 11 targets for 102 yards too.
Yeah, because it's so difficult just to learn how to sit down in the zone. And that's when you're Cole Beasley, that's literally your calling card. I'm Cole Beasley. I sit down in zones.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, anything else here on Jacksonville, I don't really have anything else to say about them. I just hope they play better because I like when good teams play well. Although I'm a Texans fan, I like good football first and foremost. And I really enjoyed watching the Jags last year. I thought they could be one of those teams that, you know, could actually beat New England, make the conference actually difficult for them. And now they got some soul-searching to do. And I can't think of a better place than London to do some soul-searching, you know. So for Houston, you know, defensively, this game is all about the run defense. They were able to stop Yeldon. They were able to stop, like, their second, third-string running backs, guys he'll never think of again. And even more, it was kind of all Jadeveon Clowney. He had 7 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, 4 quarterback hits. He had a fumble recovery, and he had 2 sacks. J.J. Watt was pretty quiet. Zach Cunningham had a great game chasing and tackling. I think he had 10 tackles off the dome. And they've allowed 36 points in their last 3 games, which comes out to a very difficult equation. Let me run real fast. Have 12 points a game. So, BFD, do you think this is what's going to happen every single time they play a run-heavy offense?
I think there's a great chance. And Matt and I were talking about it before we started the show, is that your Houston Texans are number one against the run in the NFL right now by DVOA. And wow, that's not really a surprise at all. I mean, when you look at who we're throwing out there, and I want to talk about Clowney for sure. Oh my gosh, I was man crushing Clowney all Sunday. Is that when you look at our defensive line is guys like DJ Reader, who just takes on multiple guys, JJ Watt, who's either the first or second best defensive end against the run in football. And Clowney is the other first or second best defensive end against the run in football. And the way they used him on Sunday was fantastic. You have McKinney. Cunningham's okay. Kareem Jackson, who is fantastic against the run. He's just looks so good at safety. When you look at those guys who are throwing out there against the run, it's like, gee, no wonder we're so good against the run, because look, our team is made for that. So if your team is going to rely on the run like Jacksonville does, like a lot of the teams are facing the rest of the season, the Jets especially, they're going to be in a world of hurt, because ain't nobody going to move the team against us on the ground, Big Matt. It's just not – it's not a thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, and like during this year, I thought they would have a top 5 run defense. The run defense is even better than I thought it was going to be, with a very modest top 5 prediction. And I thought they would win 9 games, and the pass rush was really good. The pass rush has been a lot better. But the biggest thing – or no, the pass rush was healthy is what I said. And then I didn't even think that the pass rush could be bad at all, and it's turned from bad to, you know, good. It's not great yet, but it's been good. I think if Whitney Merciless becomes a competent pass rusher again, that could bump that up into great. And then maybe you have a rush who can cover up for – the issues with the cornerback play specifically. So, yeah, like it's been awesome to watch their run defense. And like Ezekiel Elliott, you know, I would consider him one of the, you know, 5 best running backs in football. He's one of the elite running backs. He only picked up 54 yards on 20 carries against Houston. And so if they're able to stop Dallas's run game, I'm not particularly worried about them against Miami. I know Denver is one of the best rush offenses by DVOA. I'm not really all that worried about them against Washington, Tennessee, Cleveland, Indy, the Jets, maybe not even Philly because they don't have any running backs, not Jacksonville. So, I mean, I think throughout the year, like, this deep run defense should finish first in DVOA. And I really don't think there's a rush offense out there that can give them any trouble at all.
No, they're just too good. And so let's take J.J. Watt first. You said he had a quiet game. Look, it seemed like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but during the game, whatever side on a pass play, whatever side of the line Watt lined up on, T.J. Yeldon was also lined up on that side to chip him. And it seemed like T.J. Yeldon's sole calling in life during the game was to chip Watt and to take him away. And he made Yeldon crush Watt a couple of times. But it seemed like that Jacksonville's primary function on defense was to take J.J. Watt out of the game and just deal with Clowney, because you couldn't do the same thing with Clowney because they kept lining him up over the A&B caps. Mm-hmm. Just letting him run wild, and it was so delightful to see the destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the thing I was wondering about this game was how they were going to use Watt, if they were going to keep him on Josh Walker. If you don't know who Josh Walker is, you'll never think of him again. He's their left tackle. He's their third left tackle they've had to play this year. And Jason Braggs said on Twitter that he was on the Texans practice squad and was saying some little lines of, you know, like he could, you know, possibly start guard for the Texans. And I don't agree with that at all. I think Walker's too slow. His foot speed is too slow to be a competent left tackle. And so throughout the year, though, they put Watt on the opponent's, you know, worst offensive lineman. And usually that was the other team's right tackle, just based off the matchups they've faced so far. But so I thought maybe they put Watt over there at right defensive end. So they kept Clowney over there. And they allowed Clowney to just work, you know, Walker over and over again. In the run game, you know, Walker couldn't get any movement. Clowney just played that textbook, just punch and sit, make run tackles. He had his second sack of the game with an edge rush against Walker. He had one of his sacks came off of swimming pass. A.J. Cann blitzing as the, you know, in the A-gap as a stamp linebacker. He beat Josh Norwell in the same move and almost either, you know, pick six Bortles or could have a safety that Bortles was able to throw the ball out to the flat quick enough to get rid of it. And, you know, he was just death and destruction and pestilence and, you know, all those bad things that could wipe out the human race in this game. And, you know, whenever you have a bad left tackle or, like, one bad offensive lineman on your team, the Texans can really take advantage of it with either Watt or Clowney.
Yeah, and I just love the way that Crennel was using Clowney. I love to see Clowney standing.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I love to see him standing, and I don't care. I know we've talked about – that's kind of hypocritical because I've talked about – I really like him better playing 3-4 base defensive end. I really like him there. He's going to be down, but he's still good. But when you're in a passing situation, I want to see Clowney up. And I like this, the way that they were disguising their blitzes against a team that's really struggling along the offensive line, I think is absolutely what drove this game on Sunday. We've talked about the turnovers. But our defense had the Jaguars' offensive line charking themselves all game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like Clowney as a 3-4 defensive end in run situations. I like him standing up and, you know, as some – sour cream on the Cam Ravioli, you know, blitzing as a stamp linebacker and run blitzes too. But predominantly I like him at, you know, right defensive end. I like him with his hand down in the run game, but just as a way to change things up, those inside linebacker blitzes are great. And it's kind of funny too, because like when the pass defense was bad those first 3 weeks, Crennel would just remember what he did that worked last time he was defensive coordinator. It was like, oh yeah, I bet this still works again. And sure enough, you know, it still works. And O'Brien has kind of learned that as well too, but has had to switch back to be more cautious with Watson's injuries as well.
Yeah, and I think hopefully they're past that. And I wonder, I've got a couple of questions I want to ask. So Matt, did you know? Did you know that Bill O'Brien is now 8-22 against teams with a record of better than 500 in his career as a Houston Texans coach? 8-22.
That's better.
Actually, that's worse. He's lost his last four. He went from 8-18 to 8-22.
Oh, the Jags game, I guess, didn't count.
Didn't count because they're now below 500.
Gotcha.
But that is a two. I think it's like a 267 winning percentage. So I forgot to bring that up in our intro when we were talking about Bob earlier, but good. Durga, that's really freaking horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just one of those things that's going to keep happening. And at least they don't have to play any good teams at all until the end of the year. So is there anything else you want to talk about on the defense at all? Do you want to talk about Cody Kessler's little, you know, 5 yards of pass attempt, touchdown drive at all?
Yeah, so I've got something I do want to say about that, and I'll be very quick, is that that drive reminded me of, because I love my Madden references, I don't care what anybody else thinks, but it's that one maddening Madden drive against you as you're playing that you've done everything right and somehow the other team scores a touchdown and you look back and they had like 14 plays for 63 yards and they got the touchdown. You like just want to punch something after that.
The computer like cheats and has to get points on you some way.
Right. It's just, it's utterly ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah. And I love that touchdown drive too, because they just played like 9 yards off and just allowed him to just walk down and, you know, take 8 minutes off the clock. And then I like the idea too. Jags fans would be like, well, we got to play Kessler. Look at this great drive he had. And they were just allowing him to walk in the end zone at that point.
That was – there was so much wrong with that drive. I hated that drive so very much.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break real fast, and then we'll be back to discuss the Texans-Dolphins game and all the revenge that's about to occur. Before we get to the Dolphins question, I lied. That was a big tease. My next question for you is, who's your favorite Texans rookie so far this year?
When he's on the field, it's Cutie Pie. Guy brings another dimension to the offense, and I cannot wait till he's healthy. We have never as a franchise had a guy like Kiki Cutie that you can point to and say, this is a guy who can create a lot of problems in the slot. I mean, when you have to go to guys like David Anderson as the best slot receiver for a franchise, that's pretty pathetic. But Kiki Cutie is finally that guy. He can be our heartbreaker in the slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did like one of those SB Nation Dolphins podcasts, like the Finnsider or whatever. And they asked me, like, you know, who's going to be the Texan slot receiver in this game? And I was like, well, they don't even have one. They've never had one at all. And so I was trying to think if they've ever had a slot receiver before. And, like, I mean, the tight end was a slot receiver during Kubiak's time. And it was just two wide receiver, two tight ends. And then, like, Baxton Miller tried to be a thing, but he wasn't a thing. And so I think you have to say that, yeah, you know, Cutie's the best slot receiver the Texans have ever had. And maybe even the only slot receiver they've had. And he's played, like, three games in his career so far.
Yeah. David Anderson, he still has to surpass the David Anderson threshold to be the best slot receiver. And because he's got to do the pluck move, right?
Yeah, the Conan O'Brien dance, the string dance. Yes. I think that's one of the things that is fun about, like, being a fan of a team is that if you were just, like, a guy who watched a lot of football and didn't really care about one team, you would miss out on the joys of knowing about David Anderson being, you know, the best slot receiver on your terrible, putrid, you know, football team that you try to love that will never love you. But my favorite rookie this year is Trevor Daniel. I just get, like, so excited whenever there's a punt that ends in a fair catch. It's like, wait, they can't return every single kick that gets kicked over to them. And that punt where they downed the 1 yard line was just spectacular. And then that punt led to a turnover at the Jaguars' 20 yard line that Houston turned into a DeAndre Hopkins touchdown that really ended the game. And it's so great to actually have a punter who's not, you know, grizzled and old, but people think it's good because he's cool and they would, you know, sit in the deer blind with him and drink Yellow Bellies.
Yeah, it's the amount of shiza I took for saying bad things about Shane Leckler last year and was told, oh, you can't look at the advanced stats and oh no, he's really good. You just don't know football at all. And look, we get a new punter and our special teams unit goes from like 32nd to what are they, like first or second right now? So yeah. Yeah, that's all I can – okay, I'm just going to say it. I was right. Y'all were wrong. Deal.
And also talking about the coverage units, and I've never actually sat there and watched a coverage unit, you know. I can just sit there and look and see that every punt, it gets returned, and there's too many punts that go in the back of the end zone, and there's not enough down the 20, and you know, that's easier to see. But I'm not going to make the argument the other way around. So Anyways, that was a question we had from Jamie on Twitter that we didn't get to last week that I wanted to make sure we get to tonight. So for playoff odds, we're now entering week 8. You know, it's getting cold now. It's been 55 degrees for like 10 days straight here in beautiful San Antonio. I haven't seen the sun. I saw the sun once Sunday morning, and I haven't seen it since. And there's Dementors everywhere right now. And so, but we're already here. We can start talking playoff odds. So I'm only going by winning the division by Football Outsiders, because I can't see any team in this division, you know, winning a wild card spot at all. So currently they have Houston with a 56.8% chance to win the division at 4-3. And then every team except for Tennessee is 3-4. But the weird thing is they're all really kind of strangely grouped together. So Jacksonville's a 14% chance. Indy has a 13.8% chance. And Tennessee has a 15.3% chance to win the division as of right now. And again, the Jags and Tennessee are 3-4. And the Colts are 2-5 at the moment.
Yeah, and this game this week was a flipper, right? Houston went up by 25%. Jacksonville fell by 21%. This game flipped it all around, and that's on totals. But with the rest of our schedule and the fact that Jacksonville's playing a first-place schedule, we're playing a last-place schedule, that really is a big deal for the rest of the season for these two teams. That's why it's entirely possible that the Texans are going to wind up 12-4 and 11-5 and be 15th in DVOA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still think they'll probably win only – I think a lot of these games are going to go from ones that they probably wouldn't win to coin flips just because of the run defense and how good it's been and the type of teams that they're playing. But I still assume that they'll probably finish around, you know, 9-7, 10-6, and that should be either just enough or more than enough to win the division.
It's going to be 2015 all over again.
Hell yeah. So the Lord, he's alive. He's real. And he's beautiful. And this week he's proven it once again in all of the mysterious ways that he knows how. And he has shown that, one, that Ryan Tannehill's AC joint will get sprained, and two, that he would be unable to play by the time Houston went down to Miami to play the Dolphins on Thursday Night Football. And so Manifest Destiny's here. Name Redacted starting this week in Miami against Houston. BFD, do you have any vitriol towards Name Redacted? Are you thirsting for revenge in this one? For all the wasted Sundays you spent in 2016.
There is a part of me, I have to admit, that would be absolutely giddy to see Brock Osweiler win on a fourth quarter drive on Thursday night. Part of me that would think that would be so freaking hilarious and comedy gold on so many levels. Because of all the stories that came out, especially after Brock left, that Bill O'Brien had him pinned up against the wall by his shirt in the stadium and all that crap like that, and all the, you know, all the hand washing that went with Brock Osweiler, and Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien both said, oh, he wasn't my guy, and all the melodrama that went with that. Part of me just thinks that it would be really freaking cool if Brock Osweiler just drove the team down, scored in the fourth quarter, and just took a dump on the 50-yard line.
So. It would be the most Texans thing ever, for sure.
That would be the most Texans thing. So do I have any ill feelings towards Brock Osweiler? Yeah, of course I do. Watching him play quarterback was a waste of my time, just like it has been to watch Bill O'Brien OC and be an OC in this league. But do I blame Osweiler? Do I blame Bob? The answer is yes. But, yeah, I'm going to watch this game, and I think any way this comes out, I'm going to be happy just because there's going to be some sort of stupid revenge one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be the most Texans thing ever. The thing I would want to see if the Texans lose to the Dolphins is both Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien to leak reports to the media saying that Name Redacted was my quarterback. He was my guy. I wanted him the entire time. I told y'all I knew he was going to be great. That would be just so spectacular and beautiful. But so the Texans are playing the one and only, you know, guy they spent all their money for in 2016. And we've come back and they're running the same offense that they used in 2016. Just there's the aura, the mirage that Watson can actually be used as a runner as well, too. Now, when you close your eyes and you hear the name Brock Osweiler. What image do you see? What stands out the most from his time in Houston?
The inaccuracy, the just the inability to get the ball close to his receivers at times. And I'm not talking, there were several times when he was 10 yards away from the freaking wide receiver. Accuracy is what makes a quarterback in the NFL, and Brock Osweiler wants nothing to do with that concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever I think of him, I'll forever see the fumble. That was the game against Denver when they scored, I think, 6 points and lost like 20-6 or whatever. And the reason why I'll never forget it mainly is because he averaged only, I think, 3.6 yards an attempt that game, and he threw a fumble farther than his average pass attempt, and it was just the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. It also happened like the third or fourth quarter too, where like the game was over, you know, everything was just despair. It was awful and it was terrible, and you know, he at least you know, snuck that last bit of joy with that hilarious throw.
Yeah, that's kind of the one I was specifically thinking of, but there's so many. There are so many, like, especially outs. He might throw one 10 yards short, 10 yards long. You just had no idea where the ball was going at any point in time.
Mm-hmm. So we had a question from Uprooted Texan, and he asked, what's the most hilarious interception Name Redacted will throw on Thursday?
It's been a while. I would love to see an interception off a referee. I think that'd be fun. It's been a while since I've seen one. I've seen one. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I think the way it would have to happen, I mean, I think he's probably going to throw two interceptions. And it's probably just going to be like some one-on-one route where Jonathan Joseph probably will get one where he's just playing like 8 yards off and the guys can run a post and he'll break on the ball and be able to kind of snatch it pretty quick. But, I mean, I think I've seen every hilarious interception the guy can throw. And my imagination is just dried up. I really don't. I haven't been cute or clever about what he can do. Because he's already done it, you know. He's already done it. I've seen it already.
Yeah. No, there's got to be some sort of style factor to it. It's got to be off a ref or off the mascot or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess because you have the Fitzpatrick, you know, helmet interception. You have the Bortles kick pick. And then him, you know, you have the fumble. So I think that was more than enough. Miami right now, they're averaging 4.6 yards a carry, which is 11th in football. Do you think Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore will run the ball against Houston at all?
No.
Does Miami, do they do anything well on defense? Can Houston play 2016 football to win this game?
Yes. I think this is another game. I think this is what we're going to see from here on out is if you consider how conservative Bill O'Brien is, just de facto as a coach, and you look at what's working, theoretically, I mean, you really should be playing. This is 2018, folks. I mean, we're looking at 1973 football again. But that's what we're going to see from the Texans from here on out. I think you're going to see that we're just going to grind it out with Lamar Miller and Alfred Blue Hurl, that we're going to not see Deshaun Watson try to stretch the field, because if there's one thing Bill O'Brien is not going to tolerate, it's going to be turnovers. So you're going to see a very, very conservative game plan. It's going to be boring as all hell, and we're going to try to win every game from here on out 20-10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's back to, you know, hungover football with Houston. It's going to be on a Thursday night, so I can't even be hungover to watch this game to fully enjoy it. It's going to be an alien experience, you know. But for Houston this game, I mean, I don't think Miami's going to run the ball at all. You know, their interior blocking isn't very great. I do think Laremy Tunsil is going to be the best offensive lineman they've faced so far this year. You know, he runs into trouble by missing blocks and by not knowing who to block. He, you know, blocks down when he should block the edge rusher. He, you know, doesn't block the right linebacker sometimes, but his upper body is insanely strong. When he gets his hands on you, like nobody, you know, really gets out of his grasp. And he's a true franchise left tackle. And I think him against Watt and Clowney, probably be mostly against Clowney. It's going to be a really great matchup. I think it's going to be the best offensive tackle Clowney and Waller both have gone up against an offensive lineman, period, this week. But, you know, even then, like, the Dolphins' offense is all inside runs, and then it's all name-redacted swing passes because he can't throw the ball downfield with any accuracy if there's, you know, two safeties back there at all. So everything's short. It's all really boring. It worked against the Bears because Albert Wilson was healthy, and he just had the game of his career. And it really made me wonder, like, how good Albert Wilson would be on the Chiefs in 2018 as well. Like, if they signed him instead of Sammy Watkins, like, how absurd, how much better that offense could have even been, too. But if unless guys are breaking tackles or running forever, you know, the passing offense is going to be really bad, too. And I know Kenny Stills is out this week. Albert Wilson's out this week. It's going to be a lot of Kenyon Drake. It's going to be a lot of Frank Gore. It's going to be a lot of Gillespie. The one guy who I think is super interesting is Grant. He's a great kick returner. I think they're going to have to use him as well as a slot receiver. And he's a guy who Jakeem Grant used like a third-round pick out of Tech. And he's dynamite. It's just really going to depend on how good of a receiver he can actually be. But like, that's who he's going to be able to throw to. He doesn't even have the talent he normally has. And then defensively, you know, their linebackers are slow. Their rookie linebacker, Jerome Baker for Ohio State, is terrible in coverage. Kiko Alonso can't play man coverage. You know, Rashad Evans is a good safety. Xavier Howard's one of the best cornerbacks in football. But that's only two guys out of, you know, six or seven that are possibly going to be in coverage. So I think Houston's going to be able to make enough downfield passes on the sidelines with, you know, Fuller and Hopkins. They'll move the ball. And then their pass rush isn't very good either. It's, you know, Spence. Robert Quinn's fine. He's a good technical pass rusher. He just doesn't have the athleticism that he's had before. And so I think Watson's going to have a lot of time. I think he's going to make, like, three downfield throws. They'll, you know, kick enough field goals. And I'm assuming Houston's going to win this game. So I have the Texans winning 19-16. Who do you have for this one?
Oh, I'm going to go because I like my field goals, right? I think you just have to like your field goals when you're the Houston Texans. I'm going to go 23-17 Texans. You mentioned a couple of those guys. I think Amendola is healthy now. He should be playing. And I'm sorry, Amendola has been playing all season. Devontae Parker is one who's going to be healthy this game. Mm-hmm. So supposedly he's supposed to be back. That'll be interesting to see because he's a freak if he's ever healthy, but he's never healthy. Losing Stills and losing Albert Wilson are pretty big deals for Osweiler, though, because you're right. This is a guy who's going to rely 100% on getting the ball out of his hands and letting those guys make plays with their feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also with him, too, like he's so slow in the pocket that if there's any rush at all against him. Especially, like, I think Watt's going to have a huge game against Miami. He can't escape from anybody at all. And he has no, like, pocket presence. Remember him in 2016 where he's a baby deer back there, like a cat with tape stuck on the bottom of his feet, kind of clopping around back there whenever there's any sign of a rush, too. So I think that's also working in Houston's favor. Yeah, and also, I think it's kind of a game where they go up early, like, you know, 13-0 or 16-0, like they did against Jacksonville, and they allow some cheap drives, and the game looks closer than it was. But, you know, I'm assuming every game is going to end in one possession for Houston the rest of the year.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to believe otherwise because that's how Bill O'Brien's going to play it. Again, Bill O'Brien's going to always fall back on to what he's most comfortable with, and what he's comfortable with is playing for the tie.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're playing for 1 point more than the tie.
Yeah, it's just going to be ridiculous. I think, you know, I want my unicorn. And I was promised a unicorn. Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson is going to give everybody a unicorn that poops brisket and pees a delightful autumnal mead. Instead, yeah. What we've got a 48-year-old horse that has a paper towel, like the thing, the metal part sticking up out of its head, and it poops Kansas City barbecue and pees Coors Light. That's not the unicorn that I wanted. I wanted my unicorn. I'm not getting my unicorn. What instead I'm going to get is I'm going to get Deshaun Watson being told to play for 20 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've accepted it, and I'm okay with it until Watson gets healthy. But if it's December and they're still playing this game, I'll go back to being upset again. But for now, I can accept it. The one thing I'm going to add before we end tonight's show is Miami, I think, is aesthetically – the Miami Dolphins are my least favorite team to watch play. I can't stand their, like, revamp of their colors, like the aquamarine, like, mermaid sequin color. The dolphin now looks like some toothpaste that you smashed in a fit on your bathroom, like if you stub your toe, you know, walking the space in the morning. They're also, like, their end zone wall is a foot behind the end zone. Can he still smash the security guard because there's no room at all for the guys to run at full speed? Just so you know, people can drink $17 margaritas and feel like they're a lot closer to the action. And they also have like such a – oh, and they have Miami. They have a perfect Miami tramp stamp on the back of their jerseys as well too. And they had such great ones with the dolphin with the cute little helmet, the football. That like green and orange they have is beautiful, is perfect. And they had to screw it all up by, you know, being this minimalist, you know, Rothko-esque Miami Dolphins football team with their color change. And I hate it. I can't stand it. And even if I like, you know, watching Lemery Tunsil play, I just am nauseous the entire time because of this rebranding they did a few years back.
Matt, I absolutely could not agree more.
I'm mad. I'm excited to write about it for Thursday's preview too. I'm going to write. One of the six things to watch for, as a spoiler alert, is how putrescent Miami's aesthetics are.
I'm in. I'm all in.
So, is there anything else that you have to add all tonight?
Just again, I'm going to say it out loud. I said it in the post. I think that every game the Texans win this year is against the best interest of the Texans long term. I just do. I think that the sooner we get rid of Bill O'Brien, the better this team's going to be. For all the reasons I mentioned, he is not a good coach. Is there ever a time when you say to yourself, thank goodness Bill O'Brien is their head coach? Because I've never once said that. Well, since the first season, I got to say. Because I don't want him managing the game. I don't want him challenging plays. I don't want him calling plays. I think, again, a ham sandwich adds more to this team than does Bill O'Brien.
What if the ham sandwich has mustard or mayonnaise? Would that make any better at all?
Well, see, I like my mayonnaise. UT.
I like mayonnaise until middle school. Middle school ruined mayonnaise for me, you know.
Mayonnaise and deli mustard on my ham sandwich with tomatoes and lettuce and a good Swiss.
Yeah, sounds nice. Well, all we're about Brian Malarkey whenever we get closer to December and it gets a little bit colder. I hope maybe the Malarkey thing happens, who knows. But anyways, that's all I have tonight. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. And if you're listening to the show, you know, make sure to subscribe on iTunes. It's on Spotify now, which is weird. You can follow us on Spotify. It's on Stitcher. It's on all those sorts of places. And leave us a review too as well whenever you listen to the show. But again, thanks for listening tonight. And my name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio.
Lord, I was born rambling.
I thought it was pretty good.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.